Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Healy Yore and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Feud podcast. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined by Shotgun Spratling and cousin of the pod, Chris Trevino. We have a fun show for you guys today. We're wrapping up USC's 2021 spring camp. We'll give you our final observations and takes, and we'll revisit what we were expecting prior to spring camp and what we think about our takes now that we've had 5 weeks to see the Trojans in action. We'll also talk about some transfer news. USC picked up another Texas transfer out of the NCAA transfer portal, so we'll get into that. And of course, we'll have some questions and Chris's classic segment, Take It or Leave It. Before we dive into that, just as a reminder, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Also, rate us 5 stars. That helps us out. You can email us your questions or submissions to the show at familyfeudpod@gmail.com. Also, look out for a tweet from Sir Shotgun Spratling. Usually he tweets out right before we start recording, so be on your toes, but at Shotgun SPR. He's the question guy.
Yeah, just put me on alerts and then you'll be good to go.
Exactly.
You'll get a lot of tweets.
You'll be inundated with random pointless things.
What?
I know because I have you on alerts.
What random pointless things have you been inundated with?
Sometimes you find things interesting and just retweet them and you're like, oh my God. And then I think something USC related is breaking and it's like a penguin jumping off a cliff.
Well, those are things you need to see.
Okay, I guess.
Come on, Chris. Back me up on this. If it's penguin related, it needs to be seen.
I'm just going to get this out of the way now. It's going to be a Helium Boys Aligned podcast because Keely made me mad this morning. So I'm
not
already.
Actually.
We're adverse.
No.
We're adversaries for today's recording.
I'm okay with it.
So, yes.
Of course you are.
People need the penguin content. I got you. That's all I'm going to say.
Now, the only reason why we're adversaries today is because I suggested we do stock up, stock down. That's all. But we're not. So you won ultimately. So I don't know why I'm still your enemy, but it's fine.
Don't ask me questions. I'm not an official member. I have no voting power.
Yeah, and yet you still.
Good thing I was preoccupied with other things, or else I'd be with Team Keely on this one.
Ayo.
I'm the
now where do you lie?
I'm Washington D.C.
But I was preoccupied, so you know.
I'm Washington D.C. I have no voting power.
But you might. Hey.
Are you Washington D.C. or more like Puerto Rico?
Why? Because I'm Hispanic.
No, because you're coming in late.
I am from the DMV.
PG County boys
for life.
That's like a short, stocky game for life.
That was perfect. We didn't practice that.
We didn't. See? This is why I'm not your enemy.
I'm part of many movements. PG County boys, short and stocky game.
Yeah, you are.
Turnover traveler.
Yeah.
Helium boys. I'm part of all these groups. I'm a Renaissance man, and I can be part of a lot of things.
It's true, you can.
I just like how you're, every single time that you're slapping your two fingers together in a hashtag form.
Visual bits.
Got it. Oh, starting off early, Chris. Well done.
And I got the Rugrats shirt on, Reptar. No one can see.
Shotgun isn't wearing his Rugrats hat, so you guys could have coordinated. So
you're oh, that's really right. He does have a Rugrats hat.
You aren't Helium Boys.
And some Reptar socks, so.
Wow. Anyway, let's dive into the news of the week on Monday. USC picked up another commitment out of the transfer portal. Another guy from Texas, the third this offseason, redshirt junior tight end Malcolm Epps. It's interesting. He's kind of a tweener guy. He played his first 2 years at Texas as an outside receiver. He filled in for Texas wide receiver Colin Johnson when he got injured in back-to-back seasons. But then in 2020, he made the move to tight end. He played there in the 2020 season, wasn't as productive, and then decided to put his name in the transfer portal after Texas ended its spring camp. Apparently, he didn't do too much in Texas's spring game, and he is a Tom Herman guy, so I think it's just a change in leadership, change in depth chart, and he's trying to seek greener pastures over at USC, or should we say Texas West.
I mean, this is kind of what we talked about, how there would be more transfers going to the portal after the spring. Someone, you know, new coaching staff comes in, or just someone doesn't feel like their role is going to be what they want it to be in the fall. You go through the spring, you go, yeah, this isn't going to happen. So I'm going to go try to find somewhere else. And that's what it's become. You know, transfer portal, it should be more like teleportation for the Texas transfers coming to USC. And then same thing for USC kids going to Tennessee. Like, there's just an immediate line just going straight from anyone that goes into the portal from Texas, everyone goes, well, they're going to USC. Anyone, it seems like, that enters from USC, you go, well, will they end up at Tennessee? Because that's kind of been the situation so far. You've had multiple kids from both schools making those jumps. Caleb Tremblay recently went from USC to Tennessee as well, joining Chase McGrath. You had Velus Jones already there from Texas to USC. Now you got three guys. So, you know, it's becoming a teleportation portal instead of just a transfer portal.
It doesn't work reverse. Brew tried to go to Texas and just came back. He got spit out. It doesn't work like that. You can only go one way. It's Texas, USC. You can't go back. You can't go the other way. It just spits you back.
This is like the old show Sliders.
Did we just discover a scary...
It's like Tenet, but college football.
I don't know what that means.
It's a movie.
Movie.
Christopher Nolan.
Movie reference that I did that he didn't get. Guys.
Whoa.
It's a new movie. That's the difference.
What a day.
It's a new movie.
There were two interesting things about this to me. One, it's a pretty quick turnaround. It was a week between him putting his name in the portal and committing to USC. Apparently, this was a Brian Carrington thing. I think he was the guy on it. And two, he's a tweener. I think it's interesting that he kind of is that description of Drake London a little bit, where he can kind of move both inside and outside. And the fact that Katie Nixon, in my mind, hasn't really panned out, I think, as USC wanted him to, at least in the spring, this is an interesting addition to the wide receiver room, because I kept saying that I feel like USC needs a little bit more in its receiving production. It just feels like they're missing a something.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily just production. It's just they need more scholarship bodies. True. I mean, we were watching in the spring. It was incredibly depleted. At one point, there was just three healthy receivers, and even a lot of their walk-ons were out. Zach Wilson missed some time. Nope. It was that bad. So you're adding another big body with experience. You got another one coming in, and Joseph Manjack, who brings like 6'4" frame. He'll be a big receiver. Obviously, Michael Trigg is coming in, but you know he's classified more as a tight end in this tweener role. So I think it's a good idea to bring in another big guy to go along. You know, Drake London and Brew McCoy, who's a bigger receiver, and then hopefully you can get Kyle Ford. You know, we're still waiting on him to look 100% better. So just bringing in more size can. And another body in general for that wide receiver room can only help.
Yeah, I mean, adding more depth to the wide receiver room is big because of how limited they have been with the injuries and with guys transferring out. Manir McClain just hits the transfer portal this week. So, you know, he's a guy that we've been going. He's similar to me, to Salman Tuleala-Pupu, Jordan Iosefa, guys. Like, until they practice, we're not going to talk about him. And you know, you've been wondering what's going to be the deal with that. He goes in the transfer portal, so you don't add him to the list anymore. So the depth there just continues to whittle away a little bit. And the fact that you've had a couple of the guys you expected to be big-time contributors with Brew McCoy and Gary Bryant and Kyle Ford all be banged up consistently, then you start going, okay, we need to add some more bodies in case this becomes an injury history rather than just an injury spurt for some of these guys. So I think it's big to add a guy like this because he can play multiple positions. So, again, the tight end production has not been anything that they've wanted or that you would even desire in the last half a decade, if not longer. So, you know, adding a guy in that has some tight end experience can't hurt there. If he can block some, you say, okay, we'll throw him in, and maybe a certain game plan, he becomes the tight end in the game plan versus, you know, just in a specific opponent, and you have that extra ability to do that. So a versatile guy, versatility always it plays up, and especially when it's two positions where USC has some issues at now. One being depth on the wide receivers and tight ends, you know, just the, you know, the lack of production overall.
Imagine a red zone of Drake London, Epps, Trigg, and Brew McCoy.
It's a big boy.
That's 6'5", 6'6", 6'4", 6'3". That's a lot of size, folks.
Yeah, and that's, you know, depending on the opponent you're facing, you know, some some defenses like cornerbacks that are 6 foot one or bigger. You know, that was the Ronnie Bradford. You want that height. You want that length. Some guys, they just want playmakers. But you get a playmaker and it's Adoree Jackson, or you get in a playmaker that's a Thomas Graham. Those are smaller guys, and you know, you can go up over the top of them. And both those guys in their career, Thomas Graham not at USC, he was passed over, you know, kind of pushed out of the class by Ronnie Bradford when he took over as the cornerbacks coach. But Adoree Jackson had that issue too. If you remember the Utah games, Mike Patrick, I believe it was, Tim Patrick, the wide receiver, won a game against USC with a late touchdown where he basically was just a bigger body. Adoree Jackson couldn't get around him to make a play on a ball. And so that's what you are looking for when you get down inside the five-yard line. You can't run the football. Okay, well, you know, you put four guys out there that are 6'4". That's going to – someone's going to get be able to box out and go up and make a play. So that's another option that USC would have, adding Epps to the roster as well.
And don't forget, they also have Taj Washington coming in, the Memphis transfer, who was pretty good. He's not as big as these guys. 5'11".
Yeah, he's a short slot guy. So it's interesting that they've gone small and big.
You know.
It's no real medium.
Short and stocky would be the medium of that. I'll give you one guess.
No, it would not.
I'll give you one guess for what state Taj Washington is from.
Texas.
He listens to this podcast.
Washington. That'd be fun.
Taj Washington of Washington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the coaching staff has really emphasized Texas recruiting. They've really focused on Texas kids. Now, part of that is that these guys just coached at Texas from the defensive staff, but also you have a ton of guys that are from Texas themselves, all the way up to Clay Helton. He's a Texas kid coming out of high school, played in Texas. So you're looking at a bunch of guys that see Texas as the mecca of high school football. And I think that's playing into part of their recruiting. You wonder if they look at it and go, a kid from Texas is better than a kid from California. If they're evenly ranked, then we're going to take the kid from Texas just because we think they love football more. They play, you know, they play, it's in front of 15,000 people every game or whatever it is in Texas. Because the way they are recruiting the state of Texas makes you think that they are valuing those players more than even the local kids that may be a little bit easier to recruit and sell USC on, or sell them on USC, but they value those kids in Texas more. That's what it seems like to me.
I think it's also just a scouting thing. I think if you've been in Texas and you have a lot of Texas connections, high school coaches, etc., and you've just been in that area, I think you're more willing to go out on a limb for someone that you've been in that area longer for than maybe California, where you're still trying to get your footing.
And also just, you know, trusting the word of those high school coaches because you have that relationship with them. Oh, this guy will do this for you. This guy, I don't know, you know, away from the field type of thing. He can, you know, the relationships you built. And Craig Nivar talked a little bit about that when we talked to him during spring, is that he was really excited to get out and have spring evaluation, the evaluation period, so that he could get to meet some of the Southern California head high school coaches. Because one, he said, you know, when you're out of practice, you can pick up things not only from the players, but from the coaches. And maybe you see a new drill or something that you haven't seen before. So he was excited about that. But build those relationships, and then you kind of get that, you know, you find out who's telling you the truth, who's just trying to sell their player to you, who's going to give you, you know, the goods, who's going to give you the dirt on the other teams and the other kids that you're recruiting, and give you the truthful, you know, nature of it, rather than just trying to hype up their own kids and get them a spot. Who's going to give you the truth and help you build your program the best way possible?
Now, of course, whenever you mention the transfer portal, everyone chimes in with, oh, that's a great left tackle that USC picked up, when it's not a left tackle. So I think USC fans are obviously waiting for more. What does it look like going forward, Shotgun?
Yeah, we won't see Epps. We won't see Taj Washington. You know, maybe in the summer we'll see them at some workouts, but we won't see them until the fall. Won't be able to see what impact they, you know, end up having. But USC is going to continue. They still have a couple spots. They're going to continue to look for a tackle, and maybe someone pops free. That's what we're talking about with Epps. You know, he went through spring, didn't see the light of the tunnel at Texas, so decided to enter the transfer portal. Maybe someone still does that. But again, top offensive linemen are a rarity in the portal, and everyone is going to be going after them. So that's what has made it so hard. USC has tried to get them. It's not like, you know, wide receivers, you can put four of them on the field. It's much easier to get one of those guys to come to USC because, you know, there's more of them entering the transfer portal for one, quality wide receivers, but also you can sell, even though you have, you know, Brew McCoy and Kyle Ford and Drake London, you can still sell that there's space for you on this field as well. USC can sell that much easier because of their offense. They can't sell offensive tackle play when someone like Oklahoma comes in, and Oklahoma has produced in a similar style of offense, has produced several first round draft picks on their offensive line in the last, you know, half decade. So it's going to be difficult for USC to bring them in if there's someone who is a, you know, a really good player, but they're going to be trying to get that. Now we'll see how it plays out, but those are kind of like unicorns right now in the transfer portal. And you see how quickly big-time offensive linemen are snatched up in the transfer portal. They don't stay in there very long.
It's like a week on average that they're in there. Put on my top five 2 days after, committed 2 days later. It's like that quick.
Yep.
And it's interesting because, you know, the recruiting process in high school, like kids draw it out as long as possible. And then transfer portal, when you've been through that process already, you just want to transfer, get out of the school. You want to make sure you get all your credits taken care of. How quickly those things can come together. If you are a valued player, the transfer portal, you get hit up by 30 schools within the first 24 hours, and then, you know, you start whittling down, and usually by day three, you're ready to get it down to five. Let me see, you know, how I go about this. I was talking with a baseball player recently. There's a very similar situation. Within a week, he made a decision, and that's what you're seeing with, you know, with the highly sought-after players that are in the transfer portal. They don't want to go through the whole process of recruiting anymore.
I already done this shit. I don't need to do it again.
Basically. And because right now, because there's no visits. If there were visits, it might, you know, it might span a little bit. Let me go check out Tallahassee. Let me check out how I feel when I'm in Austin. You know, the vibe at the campus. You know, the guys that are grad transfers, they're like, I'm going to be on campus the entire time I'm there. I'm not caring about the social life. Those are the guys that are looking to take that next step and move themselves to an NFL, become an NFL prospect. So they're just worried about what can the program do for me. And USC as an offensive line, you know, that's where the trouble is. You know, how have you developed those offensive linemen, even though you've had back-to-back first-round draft picks?
And that's why they pushed it so hard this past week. And that's why a lot of the support staff guys said, hey, look what happens if you come here. Back-to-back first-round pick. They were definitely angling that to the future audience that they want to pick up in the portal and through recruiting.
Yeah, and I said this on Tunnel Vision, but I think they did a great job with the way that they tried to sell that. You know, all the social media stuff, the T-shirts, everything. You know, it's something. It's a place where you're struggling to recruit, and it's a place where you got to sell as much as you can. And they did a great job selling back-to-back first round picks. Congratulations to Elijah Vera Tucker joining Austin Jackson as a first round pick.
AVT. An OG of the Family Feud podcast. We were hitting that drum early on.
And one of the early corporate take it or leave it's, will AVT be drafted higher than Austin Jackson in 2021?
Oh.
I believe you do not take it.
I don't remember how far back that was, though.
That was a long time ago.
That was like
I may have given you an out. I brought it back around. You might have taken it that time, but I remember distinctly you did not take it the first time.
I did not take it, and I remember the reason why I didn't take it is because tackles are traditionally drafted higher than guards. So, but he ended up being the number one guard, so that's how you move up above.
That's the key, be the number one guard.
Yeah, be the number one player, and you'll be in the top 20.
Sound advice.
Well, speaking of revisions.
Oh, no.
I went back and listened to our preview podcast. And I'm like the teacher now, handing back the grades.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. So these guys don't know what they said. They don't remember. It's like that sometimes. 6 weeks ago is a lifetime for us.
Especially in the spring for me.
Yeah, especially in the spring.
You think this is going to hurt me? I make bad predictions every season. You think this is going to hurt me? This won't hurt me?
Very fair.
Check out my scars. Look at my scars. Look at my scars.
Are we getting these papers back in red ink or, you know?
It's when they walk by and they put the test down so no one else can see it. And you're like, oh, shoot.
Yeah, that never happened to me.
Damn.
Why?
Because he was smart.
Bad grades.
Ew, I don't believe that.
Wait, what was your GPA in high school?
GPA in high school? 3.8 or something? I don't know. But we only had a 4.0 scale.
Yeah.
Are you, you were throwing up sets over there. Were you saying you were a 4.0 gang or something?
Well, are we doing weighted or unweighted here?
Yeah, whatever. That's what I don't get. What is this weighted thing where you're like, whoa, I had a 4.8 GPA? It's on a 4.0 scale. How do you have
because
a 4.8?
Because an AP class is an extra like credit.
See, that's dumb.
Yeah, you just said you don't have a high GPA. That's fine.
He had a 3.8 is what he said.
Okay.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think that's okay. What it was.
I don't know.
It was a long time ago,
I didn't like the...
Chris?
I'm getting in the Ryan Abraham stage and being like, that's so far back. I don't know.
I finished with like a 3.8 around that time.
I finished with a 3.99.
Oh.
And I was like, please, just give me the white robe for a 4.0. And they're like, no, sorry. 3.99 doesn't matter. And it crushed,
I like strict standards.
It crushed my high school soul. But it's fine. It's cool. But weighted, I was like a 4.something. 4.3, I believe.
I realized about... junior year that grades just really don't matter at all.
Yeah, for anyone listening, if you're listening, people in high school, that's 3.8s average around here.
Hey,
it doesn't mean anything.
You'll
just, still, you'll
my
still
name.
End up in a middling podcast.
Chris. Anyway, back to me being the teacher here. Chris, you came up with three questions that we went through in the preview pod.
You're just giving back what I put out there. I made this for you, and now you're going to use it to stab me.
Hey, no, you're the one who's taking such a negative take on your preview. So I'm going to say what y'all said. You can either agree or disagree. Shout outs to the old segment. Or revise what you said. Okay? Okay.
Can I guess what I did before?
Sure. Yeah, actually I want
to. I want to just try to dig deep into my mind.
Okay. So the first question we were trying to answer was, what is the biggest question heading into spring camp? Other than the offensive line, because that was the duh of the question.
The duh.
So, Shotgun, what do you think he said?
Oh, I have no clue what I said. I'm just going.
How do you not? We got into a fight about it.
I don't. Like you said, it's 6 weeks ago. It's in the spring. I don't sleep in the spring.
Yes, we know. You have to say it every podcast.
He doesn't know what he had for dinner last night.
At 2 a.m.
I honestly, when I went to sleep at night, I was like, what did I eat for dinner?
There we go. So you said, what will they get out of the spring game? How are they going to use it?
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
That aged well. That
no,
aged
it
well.
Didn't.
I think that aged well.
No, I think my point about it aged well because we got into a fight about it, and I was saying the overall culture matters and it shouldn't just hinge on one day or one practice. And I think that is true because the physicality was the string throughout all 15 practices at times, most of the time.
At times, most of the time.
But it was an actual game.
Yes, but he was all in a frizzy about
it. Tizzy?
A tizzy.
And a frizzy tizzy.
Yeah. And so.
I do have a lot of hair right now, and it gets curly. It could be a frizzy tizzy.
True.
I don't know how you want me to respond to this.
You're on the witness stand.
Do you regret what you said?
Do I regret? No. I think that was still a huge question. What were they going to get out of the spring game? And they went and got something out of it by playing an actual game, getting actual game reps for people. It wasn't a spring showcase. It wasn't a glorified practice. Four quarters. Now, the last quarter and a half, you go, you know, what was really taking place there? It just seemed like it was basically punting back and forth because the defensive line was dominating so much and, you know, creating havoc in the backfield. But I think the build-up to that was really positive, the physicality, and I think that carried over into the game. Now, the 2 weeks after that was about mixing and matching. That was the big, you know, the big talk and the big thing that they did, and it was less about the physicality. So, you kind of had that two-week where things just kind of faded a little bit, it felt like.
I will say, though, it wasn't a classic Helton-era fade, because a classic Helton-era fade would have been no shoulder pads, kind of just doing special teams a lot, you know, just, the mental reps were really important for the young guys. We still saw them in full pads every practice we were out there, and we did see some version of thud. So I think it was an elevated taper off than what we've seen before.
And part of the fade was that at one point on the final Tuesday practice, there was 40 guys were not available.
Yeah.
40 scholarship guys that were unavailable for the final period on that Tuesday, the last practice I was able to attend. So that played into it for sure. And that was injuries. That was some different things. It was transfer portal, just different guys. 40 guys that were on the scholarship guys were on the roster. So that played into it. And I think they got a lot out of the spring. That was the big difference. And I think that the spring game was a showcase for the fact that they got a lot out of the spring. So I don't regret mine.
Okay.
And I think it was a great biggest question.
Well defended. Well defended.
Of course you do. You would never admit that. Chrissy T, do you remember what you said?
Was it Clay Maguire?
Yes. You said, what progress will Clay Maguire make in his first spring camp?
Yeah. For sure.
I think that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I could have failed at that one just because we were all curious as to what impact Maguire had. And I think he did have some impact. I mean, I think we're not going to fully see the full comeuppance of the offensive line until the fall and getting closer to that season kickoff. But I think he's done some good things, getting into the finite details of things, had some impact with sort of new formations and short yardage stuff, which obviously we can't talk about. But I think there's been impact, and I'm excited to see how that goes on throughout, you know, the offseason and then going into summer and fall. So I think I got what I wanted out of that question.
I think so. I think he made more of an impact scheme-wise than I think I was necessarily anticipating, because I kind of came into the mindset of like, it's okay, this is coach speak. This is like, yeah, we'll fix it, but then not see anything really different. And it was like that for the first couple practices, and then there was a Tuesday after the defensive domination on Saturday that they came back with some wrinkles, and I was like, oh, okay, we do see some new wrinkles. So I think I got more than what I was expecting.
Yeah, I think the question was a good question, and I think it's a question we're still waiting for the answer for.
Yeah.
I think, like Chris said, we won't know for sure until we see the offensive line, how they play, but I think we also won't know for sure if what we saw in the spring with some different wrinkles and whatnot, if that's continued, or if it's just like, it's spring, let's try some different things out, you know, or if they actually do put some of those wrinkles into the game plan going forward into the fall. That'll be the interesting part. And I think, you know, that offensive line is going to be a big question mark of who's going to line up there. So does Clay Maguire have an impact in choosing that group? Because we've seen so frequently under Clay Helton is that the guy with seniority, if a guy is, you know, established in a spot, he's not getting pushed out a lot. So you would say, oh, they got four starters at offensive line. You would expect those four guys. Do we see some, you know, do we see some guys get moved around a little bit? That would tell me that Clay Maguire is having a little bit of an impact too there.
Now, in classic Keely fashion, I had two questions in one, and then I had two audibles.
That is classic Keely fashion.
Yeah. So my first one that I said off the top of my head was, who replaces Talanoa Hufanga? And I also said, how important was Hufanga to Orlando's scheme? Now, I don't feel like we could fully answer this, just because when you have Max Williams go down pretty early in camp, and then you have Isaiah Pullamau move over to nickel, I don't feel like you fully know. And it sounded like Todd Orlando, he made it sound like that wasn't a permanent move, especially when you're anticipating getting Greg Johnson back. So I don't fully know if we can answer that yet. But I don't think his importance to the scheme was as much as I thought prior. The other audibles I had was, how will the running back roster shake out? And then Shotgun added an audible on my audible, which was, how much do we see the vets in practice? Which was a good one, because we actually did see
a lot of vet time.
And then my third one, which I think was the underrated storyline of camp, was, how does Keenan Slovis look in year three? Because if you remember preseason or like pre-spring camp, there was a lot of like, he's back, folks. Like, he did the camp, the QB camps, like, his arm feels good. Year three, let's go. We figured it out. And I don't think I fully saw that. I don't think I fully saw it translate in camp. And it's still something where I'm like, not sure about that. So we'll see. I just think at this point, having a third-year quarterback, it should look different in spring camp. And I asked Clay Helton, last pre-practice presser of spring, hey, is Keaton Slovis where you want him to be in spring camp? And he kind of gave me this like runaround answer and included leadership in the answer. So I don't know. But I just think at some point we expected the interceptions to taper off as camp progressed. And I don't think we saw that.
Yeah, and you know, there's a bevy of reasons for it of, you know,
yes,
you know, those wrinkles you're adding, those are new plays. Well, you're doing it with new receivers. The offensive line is in and out. They're mixing and matching. So there's a lot of pressure. Yes, all those things are true. But he had double-digit interceptions in 15 practices, in 10 practices that we could see. So he's got to be able to do better than that. You can't have that in a game. If, you know, if you're getting an interception a game, that's too many. He needs to, you know, if he plays the full season this year, He needs to be throwing 40 interceptions and having 5 or 6 40 touchdowns and 5 or 6
interceptions.
That'd be a lot. 40 touchdowns with 5 or 6
I thought you were about to say, if he throws 40 interceptions, he needs to have 150 touchdowns to even it out.
Yeah,
NFL ratio. Blitz statistics over here.
What a drop. Great drop.
Chris, what were your thoughts about Keaton?
I'm not as worried about it as you guys are. I think it's just like spring. It's just going to happen. If it's happening in the fall, I think fans should be a little bit more concerned. I was just giving him the benefit of the doubt that, you know, he's working his way back to, you know, where he was in, I guess, 2019. He worked on some new mechanics. I thought he had some really, really nice passes in some practices. And, you know, he's getting used to some new receivers on the outside. Drake London getting that chemistry on the outside. Not a full stock of receivers. A lot of walk-ons he was throwing to at times. So I'm not as, like, panic button on it. But I will say that, yes, you would think it would look a little bit more cleaner. But, like I said, not hitting the big red button just yet.
I have more concern because it's a third-year starter.
Sure.
Versus if he was taking over this year and, you know, he played some in the past as a backup or whatever, a couple starts. No, he's a 3-year starter now. Now, obviously, 2020 was really weird.
Yeah, I was about to say, are we grading too harshly? Because this is not a normal third-year starter by any means.
Coming off a bad mental funk.
He didn't come into the 2019 season as the starter, like fall camp, whatnot.
But when you start from game two.
But you get chemistry with guys.
Full season.
It's different.
Full season as a starter there.
I'm just saying.
He does not have 2 full seasons as a starter.
If you don't count 2020 as a full season.
I'm not.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Are we grading too harshly here?
He has what, like 16, 17 games as a starter? That's pretty much 2 seasons, guys.
But what I'm saying is it's not like he was – it wasn't an easy road for him, like a normal QB1 starter who knows, hey, start a fall camp, you know, opening game you're starting, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get into a pandemic season, et cetera. Like, I'm just saying.
Yeah, there's been challenges. There's been challenges this spring. There's been challenges along the way. But after 2019, he put up great numbers, great expectations come with that. And people, you know, are looking at him as a potential early round draft pick. My expectations for an early round draft pick are better than what I saw this spring. Now, will he come out and kill it during the fall? I hope so. I hope so for the kid. He's a great kid. Great. Enjoy talking to him, talking about X's and O's and breaking things down. But the expectations for an early round draft pick, I would expect more during this spring.
That's fair. That is very fair. Okay, moving on to our second pre-camp question. What are we looking forward to in camp? And I had a very basic answer with practice observations. But that tells you how much that was just...
You missed it.
We missed it. So I stand by that. It was really fun to see practice.
And you got it. Full practices.
I thought we were only going to see 1 practice a week, and we ended up seeing 2. So.
And it wasn't like 10 minutes.
Yeah, no. We got to see the full practice.
The whole shebang.
From a different perspective, which was really fun, too.
Really liked it. So shouts to USC for... working that out. Chris, do you want to guess or how do you want me to
I believe I said the freshman quarterbacks.
You did.
Boing.
So you're
sorry. I didn't like have a noise prepared for like when I get things. I'll try a different
one. You can workshop it.
Yeah, I mean everyone wanted to watch not 1, but 2 highly ranked freshman quarterbacks. And I think USC fans would have been really excited to see what they were seeing, especially out of that young man, Jackson Dart. Fans got to see it in the spring game. It wasn't that much in a daily practice, but he was usually good for at least 1 thing that made you go, whoa, that was pretty nice. And then Miller Moss, you could definitely tell there was progression throughout his spring camp in terms of like looking a little bit more confident. Didn't have as many, you know, big time throws that Jackson Dart, but he did have some nice throws. A little more checkdowns than Dart, who would, you know, push it a little more. But I enjoyed watching the QBs as someone who tracked a lot of the freshmen this spring. So
you did. The question I asked Ryan that I'm curious about what you guys think: how much do you think the confidence or comfortability as spring went on is due in part to the fact that Dart actually had a senior season, whereas Miller Moss didn't really have one and kind of came in a little rusty in that sense.
Yeah, I wrote about this going into it. I think it played a little bit of a, I think it played a big role because, you know, reps in high school are critical and especially at the quarterback position. You know, Moss has his fair share of reps. He's been playing since a freshman. He had more, you know, relative to a guy like Jake Garcia. That's why Jake Garcia went out to Georgia to try to get more reps. That's was his whole, the whole point of it. He wanted more reps. He knows he needed more reps, and it looks like that's paying off for him because he's kind of doing kind of well out there in Miami. So kudos to him. But Dart had like one of the most incredible senior years you could have. Checked out every box, put up those video game numbers, won a state championship, did all these things. So he has a lot of confidence going into spring camp and college. I think that's crucial. And I'm not saying Miller Moss like wasn't doing anything. I'm sure he was still working on his own, but you can't replicate, you know, being a game, leading a team, making all those throws, facing actual defenses and making plays. So I think that played a huge role.
You can't simulate live defenses. You know, all the QB camps that you see, do you ever see them going against an 11-on-11 defense? No. It's QBs throwing to wide receivers. That's it.
Don't tell Trent Dilfer that.
I'm not a Trent Dilfer fan. That's why I love Raylan Goforth, who Trent Dilfer still got mad at for
going a little too hard.
Yeah. Is there like a yearly quota where you have to mention this on this podcast?
He brought him up.
Look, I just know he loves talking. It gets him going. I just wanted to push that button.
Yeah, so you're not seeing, you know, live defenses. That's the biggest difference there. So it's been, you know, a year and a half or so since Miller Moss has gone up against a live defense. That's a huge difference. You know, actually probably the Under Armour camp going up against 7-on-7 was probably the last time he saw, you know, some elite players on the other side and not just a practice kind of situation. And that was, you know, there's very little 7-on-7 in those type camps. You know, it's more about the one-on-ones. So I think that there is definitely was a buffer period, I guess, you know, where you just shake off the rust and get going. And we saw Moss make some, make some strides later in the camp. He did the right things of checking down and stuff. He wasn't making a bunch of dangerous throws or you just going like, you scratching your head, like, what were you even seeing there? We did see a couple of those, you know, probably one or two of each quarterback, you know, you can't make that throw in a game type of thing. Like maybe you try that in the spring and realize, okay, that's not something you can do in the game against D1 college athletes. And I think that, you know, it's an underrated facet of the fact that, you know, he was a little bit behind Dart in this spring camp. Whereas Dart, like you said, the confidence boost coming off that senior year, he's sky high. You know, he's, you know, thinks he can rip it past anyone. And we saw a couple of special throws in that regard. The one I think of is the touchdown pass, a short pass, but flings it sidearm, gets it in there, even though really good coverage from Kalen Bullock on that. So those are the type of things that you throws that you make when you are playing at a really high level and you have a ton of confidence. You're coming off that senior season versus Moss is like, maybe in his mind he's thinking, don't want to make a mistake here. Maybe I'll just check this down rather than, you know, when you catch fire in a game, you're like, give me the ball, I'm putting it up.
Momentum.
Yeah.
And as a little add-on, they always weren't getting the best protection up front. There were times where they were under fire a lot of times. And Dart is a little bit more mobile. That was his thing in high school. So he had a little bit of an advantage. Moss can move a little bit. But, you know, obviously Dart has a little bit more of a upside and with his legs. And we saw him rolling out a lot, moving out a lot, taking off on the run. So I want to keep that in mind that they were under pressure for a lot of the camp.
And particularly for Moss in the spring game, he was under pressure a lot.
Yeah, and played way more than he probably expected.
But, you know, he needs those reps.
Yeah.
True.
Alrighty, the final preview question that we had. Your spring star will be...
You didn't say what I was looking for.
Oh, yeah, this is so weird because I did this in the last podcast, too.
Yeah, yeah. Leave that in.
Cut you out in the last one, and you're like, I didn't get to say what am I looking forward to.
It's fine.
It's so weird. Okay, that's creeping me out. Okay.
I got you, big dog.
Shotgun, do you remember what
no.
you said? You said...
Never.
No.
You had multiple points. Classic. You said, how will the offensive line develop? Who gets second team reps? How have the offensive line bodies changed? And how will they develop under Clay McGuire?
So it was all offensive line, though.
Yes.
I was looking forward to, quote, in big parentheses, offensive line.
Yes.
Okay.
And how do you feel about that?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, what do those bodies look like to you?
The Casey Collier one is the one that stands out.
You were really high on Casey Collier in the preview pod as well.
I mean, if he's actually 6'9 now, no, I can't really see that, but that's what Clay Helton has said, you know, that he's grown from 6'7 to 6'9. The fact that he's added on weight, he's still moving well. He's now, if he did add a couple of inches, it's going to be even more of an emphasis for leverage. He's got to get down. He's got to sink the hips, got to get down on those blocks. He's got a ways to go still, I think. But the potential is definitely there. So seeing his body and seeing the way he was moved with that added weight is a positive sign there. But I don't think he's ready to be a first-teamer. You know, as far as the rest of the bodies, I mean, Monheim looks even more of a dude than he did in high school. You know, he was I think he's pretty much toned up the body fat that he had as a high schooler. And maybe, you know, I've talked about, and Chris has mentioned this in his depth chart, that, you know, we saw Monheim as an interior guy coming out of high school. And you know, that USC was putting him at tackle, I thought, was more of a desperation move than a move, a potential that could be a good fit. But seeing him more and more there and the way he moves on the outside, you know, I think that, you know, that's a good fit. USC's scouting was much better than mine on that one. I give him credit for that. And you know, I think that his body looks a lot different than it did in high school. So that one stands out to me. As far as the returners, no one has pulled the Nico Fala and come to Pro Day, and suddenly you're like, wait, who is that guy? Oh, wait, that's Nico. Whoa. No one did that necessarily in the 8 weeks of conditioning and stuff. But I think the group as a whole looked the part. Now, can they block the part? That's going to be the big question. And they didn't necessarily do that. But I try to take a vested interest in the offensive line and go down because we had the different vantage point. We could actually see the offensive line because they're usually in the farthest corner away from us. So try to listen to as much as I could of Clay McGuire. And I thought it was really interesting, some of the small pointers that he was making, the small details that he was really harping over and over on some of the offensive linemen to try to get them to work on. So I think that they're headed in the right direction. Now, will the results follow? That's still to be determined. We'll see with injuries. We'll see what five they actually put up there. A lot of things. But I do think the offensive line is headed in the right direction.
I thought it was interesting just hearing how it seemed like McGuire got more comfortable vocally during camp as it progressed. And on certain plays where there was a touchdown, you'd see Clay McGuire kind of run over and yell out a certain offensive lineman, like, that's exactly what I wanted from you. Or on the opposite side, he'd say, that's inexcusable. You have to fix that. I mentioned last week on the podcast that he said that to Cortland Ford. And so I thought it was just interesting how it seems like he's paying attention more detailed than I don't know. That's not fair to say because we couldn't really hear from our vantage point in prior camps. But I just think it's interesting how more comfortable he got during spring camp. And mentioning the strength and conditioning, I'm curious how more weeks under Bobby Steiner and the boys.
Bobby Steiner and the boys.
How that will progress people's bodies, because it seems like he just got a chance to work with them. Now, round two, what will that look like? What will that produce?
Pretty much all positive reviews from coaching, players. You know, normally we would kind of hear whispers of like, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
But we haven't heard that from Bobby Steiner and the boys.
Also, just like a unity thing. I think however he engineers the strength and conditioning, it seems like it brings the guys closer together. So an added bonus there. Now moving on to the final question for real this time. Your spring star will be Shock and Smartling. Do you remember who you said?
Nope.
Cortland Ford is what you said. You were tempted to say Casey Collier and you said Cortland Ford.
I would not agree with that being either one of them being a spring star.
You look surprised for the listeners at home.
I look surprised?
You look surprised by what you said.
Oh, yeah, I'm surprised that I picked an offensive lineman, but I felt like one of those guys could potentially jump in and you know, really establish themselves as a left tackle. And maybe Ford did that just by the reps that he got, but I think Andrew Voorhees' stint at left tackle in the spring game was the most telling portion of the offensive line all spring to me.
And we're also not talking about Cortland Ford like you just went on with Jonah Monheim.
True. Jonah Monheim was the one guy on the offensive line that I think got the most praise of any of the coaches, any of the other players. Even, you know, when talking to some of the defensive linemen, they mentioned him.
Yeah. Chris, do you remember who you said?
Yes, it haunts me.
Oh, really?
Haunts me. Julian Simon.
You did. Mm-hmm.
And look, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. I'll be breaking down each freshman's spring camp.
Wow.
Look for that on the P this week.
Ooh.
So I'm just going to have a breakdown of what I thought they accomplished, each of them individually, this spring camp. But yes, Julian Simon was my pick. The highly athletic, dynamic linebacker out of Washington. It just didn't get there in spring. I could tell he was, you know, it was a lot he was taking in. He had to learn a lot. You know, Clay Helton mentioned that he was probably getting the hardest coaching of anyone on the team from Todd Orlando. But that just tells me he's on the right path. I know he didn't really get a lot of first team, barely got any second team. He was mainly regulated to that third team occasionally. He made a couple plays, but nothing that was like, oh, this guy is the spring star. And that's fine. I went in a little bit too early. I'm not selling any of my Julian Simon stock. I'm just holding it, baby. Because he's gotten this developmental learning period. Let's go through the summer. Let's go through another 8 weeks of training. And I'm excited to see what he looks like in the fall. Doubling down. Fall camp star.
Wow.
I got to double down.
You just like dug yourself a bigger hole through that.
To the Julian Simon to the moon, baby.
To the moon.
To the moon. And this makes me curious of how as a jump off point to this, how Rajon Davis will do when he comes in, because, you know, we had a freshman linebacker. It took them a whole spring camp to actually maybe look a little bit comfortable. So I wonder how Davis is going to look. I mean, he's in the Trinity League. He's at Mater Dei, which is like the best coaching you can get. He also got a senior season. So maybe it's a little bit like the Jackson Dart. He comes in with a little more confidence. I don't know. So I'm curious to see how quickly Rajon will develop compared to how Simon went through this camp.
But also remember the linebackers in the first year under Todd Orlando in the fall were really slow to develop too, yeah. And then really took off. So Simon may have a good chance to be your fall star there. And I think Davis, it may take him a little bit longer. Maybe we're seeing that there's just more put on the linebackers. And sometimes that happens with a coordinator, the position they coach. Like, I can get this guy up, so let me give more to this position. So maybe there's being more asked of the linebackers than his other positions. And you're seeing that it takes them a little bit longer to develop under Todd Orlando.
And Rajon will have a lot more competition with Elijah Winston possibly being back, mm-hmm. Jordan Isefa possibly being back, Taylor Katoa possibly being back, Solomon Tuliapupu possibly being back. All these are like big asterisks because they've been injured a lot. I think Elijah Winston and Taylor are the two like guys you are closest maybe to being back. But
of that group, no one has played since 2019, and only one person has played. Winston got hurt during 2019, I think. I think Isefa did as well.
Off-season.
It was the off-season.
But he got hurt during the season, too. So he didn't play the full season either. So both those guys, like, and Katoa's been gone for 2 years. So you're looking at last time anybody in that group played a full season was 2018, I believe.
All fair points. But just saying, on their schedule to have at least four people possibly back in that linebacker room. So a lot of potential bodies coming in.
The USC injury schedule is never on time. They're not German trains over here. That's all I'm going to say.
Reference no one gets.
Maybe. We'll see. Tweet me if you get that.
Tweet at us specifically, all three of us, if you get that reference.
Yeah, please do. Thank you. My spring star was Xavion Alford pre-camp.
And how do you feel about that?
I don't agree with it.
Okay.
Which I'm trying to remember, like,
double down. Coward?
No, I'm not going to be coward? Like you. No, I already have my spring stars. I have multiple, but
the stars of Los Angeles.
I don't know why. I guess maybe I was distracted by other position groups. I just don't have great memories of the safety group. Not great memories, like they played poorly. Just nothing was really like flashy to me. Is that just a me thing or is that a how they played thing?
The safety position could be like super flashy or you get nothing.
I feel like it was an up and down spring, actually, for the safety group. You know, the positives, there were some times when they got beat. I think that's the product of how many young guys were in there and the fact that Isaiah Pomau, the one older guy, the returning starter at least, was moving to a different position as well. So the one guy that stood out at the safety spot is the veteran guy that was in a position he'd been in before, Chase Williams. And Clay Helton gave him praise, you know, at the end of the camp as well. And, you know, stepping up as a leader and those things. But he was in a similar position, so I think that made it a lot easier for him to do that. Now, he didn't make a ton of, you know, wow plays necessarily, but it seemed like each safety had a nice interception along the way. Chase Williams had one over by the sideline, I remember. Xavien Alford had one also by the sideline, on a different sideline. There was
most of the time it was tipped, by the sideline.
Alford had the
– Was it the Hunter Echols tip?
Interception, I believe. So, I mean, each of them seemed to have, like, one play. Oh, nice play there. But it wasn't a consistent – it wasn't Talanoa's 2020 by any means. It wasn't like, that guy's everywhere. He's making every play type of thing. But I think the guy that was most consistent was Chase Williams because he was in the same position he'd been in.
And a lot of the inconsistency with the safety position probably could be attributed to having three freshmen.
Yeah.
I think – what I was expecting was because he was an older guy and a guy who's been in Nivar's system before, I thought that maybe he would take that step forward or at least be more of a presence than maybe we saw. So I guess that's why I went out and said he was would be the spring star.
Wasn't a terrible choice.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I just am trying to make sure I'm not misremembering any like plays he made or something.
None of us had a terrible choice.
Why are you pointing at me, Chris?
Damn. Well, he thought I wasn't looking.
So very quickly, we're going to revisit these questions now that we've seen 5 weeks of camp. What is your biggest question heading out of spring camp?
Mine is still the offensive line. You know, we eliminated left tackle when we were going into spring camp, but I think the fact that we saw some mixing and matching and some different lineups and you go, maybe that lineup even looks better or it could be intriguing. My biggest question is still the offensive line. And I do also have questions about what will happen at nickelback because of the injuries there, with Greg Johnson not being able to participate, with Max Williams going down with a season-ending injury, and with Isaiah Pulumau moving there. And just the comments that were made at the end of camp about when Clay Helton and Orlando, I believe it was, or maybe it was Nivar, were asked about, you know, if that's kind of a permanent move. And they're like, we're just kind of exploring it. And, you know, no one sounded like he looks great there and we really like it. Maybe there's some, no, it was kind of like, we're just checking this out to see. So it didn't feel to me like that was something that they feel like that's the answer there. I think they probably will end up moving him back.
See, this is the problem. This is why I had like four last time. There's too many questions.
It's always a problem. There's indecisiveness.
Too many questions.
I'm writing that on your tomb.
Your biggest question.
If we're not including offensive line talk, which I think is actually the biggest question, I'm just going to stick to my guns here and what I've been harping on for the last 2 weeks. I'm wondering what the wide receiver group looks like, what just receiving looks like in general. How do the tight ends shake out? How do you use Trigg? How do you use Epps? Just curious. Who steps up as receiver two and receiver three, those extra targets outside of Drake London? That was the thing that I think surprised me in spring camp was that it just wasn't fluid. And I get that the depth is an issue. And of course, it's going to be clunky when you lose guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tyler Vaughns. But I just was waiting, I think, for a point for it to click in camp. And I don't think it ever fully did.
My biggest question is just where Corey Foreman's going to fit onto this defensive front. Because I think there was a lot of standout players on the defensive line. A lot of people got reps mixing and matching. You lost the big guy in Peely, so I'm curious to see how Ishmael Sopcich is going to fit in once he comes back, hopefully that he's healthy. Jay Toya has been playing really well as of late after Peely went down, stepping up. Jamar Sakona, I thought, was a really, really good player this spring. Dijon Benton made a lot of plays. You have Figueroa coming back. Tuli Tuipulotu is a beast as always. Jacob Lichtenstein is looking like a contributor. You have a good problem on your hands if you're Vic Soto. So I'm curious to see what it all is going to look like when you get, you know, Fig back, Ish back, and then you add the number one overall player in Corey Foreman. So good problem on hand. I think that's going to be my biggest thing I want to look at leaving spring as we move into, because the defensive line had a really good spring.
That's what I was going to point out as like an audible or last note is that.
No, I took it. I took it. It will go down on the record as mine.
Yeah, sure. It'll be yours. But listening to our preview podcast,
she edits you out.
No. Listening to our preview podcast, we didn't even really think about the defensive line or what it could be outside of Ishmael Sopcich and Brandon Peely. we didn't really, I don't think we expected much from the young guys. And that kept being a theme that kept popping up throughout camp is all these different names being like, oh, he had a good practice. He did this, you know?
And Kobe Pepe, when he comes back.
True.
Yeah. The shoulder injury kept him out for last 3 weeks or 4 weeks.
Yeah. Where does Colin Mobley, PG County boy.
PG County boy.
Where does he fit in? I don't know. Just a lot of things. Sozo's and Orlando have to work out. Jazz hands over here.
Yeah, he was doing jazz hands. Okay, our second revision, our final revision. Who is your spring star? Can I go first? Because I just...
She's like, I gotta grab it.
Just go.
I gotta grab it.
Well, I know Chris isn't gonna grab this one because we fought about this. But I'm gonna say Keontae Ingram was my spring star. I think
this is where he's shaking his head.
He's rolling his eyes at me.
Wow.
I think he elevated the competition in the running back room. I think the vets tried harder in spring because of it. And I thought he made good plays. And I think he brings something different to the running back room. And Isaiah pulled him out, said so as much. So there you go, Chris. I'm not the only one who's saying it.
She was just about to tell me to suck it, Chris. And she just edited herself, so now it's going to stay on record.
Suck it, Chris.
She almost said it. She stopped herself, but I'm going to say it. That's what she wanted to say. Suck it, Chris. In your face, Chris.
I felt she's accurate. Keontae Ingram stood out to me. I don't know if I would say he's a spring star.
Oh, he just cuts you down. He builds you up and then cuts you down.
No, welcome to my life.
I definitely thought that he stood out. But I think that competition is still going on. I think he would have had it taken over that spot. But he might be the front runner now. That's now it's going to come down to seniority versus, you know, the potential
Texas.
Right there. Texas. It is a little bit of that.
But it wasn't like a Katie Nixon situation where you're like, okay, when is he going to contribute? Or is he going to get more consistent? It was like, okay, he is a contributor.
Yeah, you look and, to me, I forget a little bit, like, this guy was a starter at Texas. Isn't it just a contributor at Texas? This is coming over and, you know, maybe he can add something. This guy was a starter, and if it wasn't for Bijan Robinson, he'd still be at Texas and be the starter right now. I think the pressure Bijan put on him and the fumbles then, you know, forced him out of that starting role. So I think he's going to come in and, you know, he's going to be one of those two backs. Mike Jinks talked about, hey, we want to have two backs. We want to be established, 1A and 1B, or, you know, 1 and 2, 2 just to relieve, and maybe it's a 60-40, 70-30 split and not using 3 or 4 guys. Keontae Ingram is one of those two guys right now for sure. Who the other guy is, that's a little bit of a question, but Keontae Ingram is definitely one of the two guys.
Look, I had Ingram as the starter in my post-spring depth chart, so...
She can tell you whatever she wants.
For the record, I have Ingram and Vavai as the top two.
Don't know that I would go spring star, though.
Who's your spring star, Chris?
Jackson Dart.
Oh, spicy.
Look, I just thought he made the most wow plays. I think he every time he had the ball, he was bound to do something exciting. There were a couple times the defense, you know, gave him props. Sometimes the offense gave him love. I think he was a threat to just do something like, oh, that was really fun to watch. He was the best player in the spring game. And yeah, I'm not saying he dominated spring, because he didn't, but there were plays where he was really exciting. And as Shotgun said, conjured up some thoughts of, I believe, Johnny Manziel.
Did you say Johnny or did you say Baker?
I don't think I said both, because you guys didn't agree with the Johnny Manziel.
Two Heisman winners.
You guys were like, no, he would never do the money sign.
I think I signed more Baker than I do Johnny, but
so that was my spring star. I think he was the one people came talking about the most out of spring. So that's my pick, and I'm sticking to it.
So I'm just curious. You thought Jackson Dart had a better spring game than Drake Jackson?
Yes.
Shotgun?
You're talking about London?
Waiting on that?
Yeah. No, I'm talking about Drake Jackson.
Jackson had a really good game. I think Drake London had the best game, to overrule both of you. But that segues perfectly into my spring star, who is the Drakes and the Jacksons. Because there's just too many. One. This is not just Drake Jackson.
What a loophole.
Drake, in his limited time in there, was terrific. You know, unfortunately, the hamstring issue, the concussion from the car accident was limited. But when he was in there, he looked like a different dude than he was last year. He looked like he's going to be a constant playmaker for them. How about the other Drake London, was playmaker all spring, was the most dominant offensive player for sure. No doubt about it to me. You know, he made big play after big play. No one can defend him. He's on the outside now. What does it matter? Okay, well, later in the camp, we'll move him inside. Slot fade, can't stop him. So he was really good. The other guy at the wide receiver position, Mike Jackson, really took a step forward and said, that guy can potentially be in the rotation there. And let's not forget Joshua Jackson, who's a guy you go, wow, he, you know, especially the first 2 weeks, he was definitely the spring star. And then, you know, you look at him and you go, that guy has a chance to be in the cornerback rotation rather than just being like, ah, that's a guy that just adds a little extra depth at the bottom of the depth chart, moving over from the offensive side. No, he's a legit cornerback, and he could be a guy that sees the field, you know, potentially for some significant reps next season.
I have to do this to you, fellow Helium boy, but after our signing day podcast, we were talking about the class, I said Michael Jackson III had a chance to be a contributor in this year, and you shot that down just because of how deep the wide receiver position could be. So I'm not letting you get away with that because you hurt my feelings when you said that. So now I need you to – that comes with an asterisk because you were down. You weren't on it. I was on it.
The thing is, though –
I'm saying there's room on the bandwagon, but I was on it.
I was on the bandwagon before you were
I'm
to
not,
begin with.
I'm not on that. Wow. No. Yes. You were on the bandwagon, and then you got off. You said, this is my stop.
This is what he did with ABT. This is what he did with ABT.
This is not true at all.
Oh, so true.
Not true.
Oh, is that true? What's the voice? Oh, is that not true at all?
Because I will die on the ABT hill.
She claims that she has this audio she's never even found.
Do you want to team up on this?
Yes, I do.
Okay, let's go. Get him.
No, the thing is, I said...
I'm shooting lightning bolts. Lightning bolts. Go ahead, defend yourself.
Really high on Michael Jackson after seeing him at camps and different things and thought that he was Amon-Ra St. Brown light.
I will agree with you that you were high on him.
And definitely thought he is a guy that could come to USC and contribute. Did I think he would contribute right away? No.
That's literally what he just said.
You will not gaslight me. I will be strong.
That's what he does.
I prefer the Gaslamp District in San Diego.
I went home and I cried.
This happens every night.
I will bring in my diary and wrote what I wrote.
Now here's the thing.
When you embarrassed me.
When
I wrote what I wrote.
I'm not saying that I disagree with my assessment even now. I didn't think that he would be an instant contributor because there was a lot of returning wide receivers.
You're morphing it into a way where you sound like you weren't wrong.
I wasn't wrong. That's my point.
You make a great politician. I'll vote for you.
I'm saying that he surprised me. I completely stand by my initial assessment. I didn't think he'd come in and be an immediate contributor. And now I've changed my opinion on what he's been able to do. I don't understand why this is a big deal. I can admit that I was wrong.
Okay.
It was still a good opinion at the time.
Just play back the 10 seconds ago where he said, I'm not wrong.
Yeah, it's over and over again.
I'm not wrong.
Alrighty. We have some questions, guys, to answer.
Oh, we got some...
So let's get into it, shall we? Our buddy Samuel, faithful listener, by the way, shout out to you. With London moving outside, is Trigg and the similar mismatch threat he poses the favorite to come in and replace him in the slot?
I'll keep it simple. Yes, I think that's the plan all along. I mean, they've been selling him that when they recruited him, like, be that Drake London type role. Opens the door with Drake London getting more outside time. I think it just makes too much sense. I think they'll probably ease him into it, but I think Michael Trigg is a future of that inside slot position that London was when he was a freshman. So, yes, is the simple answer.
So here's the more complex one.
Okay.
That's what he's here for.
Simple, complex. That's what we do.
I think Trigg is the future of that inside position if they want to go the Drake London route. The question is, do they? Because they want to get Gary Bryan on the field too. And they want to keep a tight end on the field. So... is Trigg, if he can block and stay inside and be that tight end, then yes, he can become that threat. But otherwise, you know, if he plays just a receiver and is in that inside slot position, then that's when I don't know that he's going to be able to come in and be an immediate contributor. Same thing with Michael Jackson. I'm always a little weary. Even though wide receiver is a position where you can come in and factor in immediately, just if they give you an opportunity to, some wide receivers, they don't. I'm concerned about what they're going to do with the third wide receiver. Because if they want to get Gary Bryant on the field, they're going to use him in the slot. And if they want to get Taj Washington on the field, they're going to use him in the slot. So where exactly – who is Trigg taking plays away to become that mismatch as the interior guy? If he can take over as a blocker, then yes, definitely. Because I think he can skyrocket up because of his mismatch ability at the tight end position. But he's got to block first. They want the tight ends on the field to be able to do that. That's why the tight ends have continued to play the last year and a half in this offense, even though they haven't given much production in the passing game.
Steve has a specific question for Shotgun. He says, what was weak with Amon-Ra St. Brown's game that we missed during his time here? Why did he drop so far below our guesses?
Well, there's nothing weak. It's just he's not the prototypical NFL wide receiver that you see go in the first round. He's not 6'2", 6'4". You know, he doesn't have the leaping ability or the 40-yard dash that you're looking for from an outside receiver. And slot receivers just don't get drafted as high. Now, slipping to the fourth round, that was surprising. But this was a very deep wide receiver class as well. So I'm sure that played into it, and who's looking for a slot receiver and when they're looking for one. So I think that was part of it. It wasn't that there was something weak in his game. It's just he doesn't have the attributes they're necessarily looking for. I mean, the route running's there, the hands, all that stuff. He's just not as fast as you would ideally want. He's not as tall as you would ideally want. So I think those are the measurables are kind of what held him back a little bit, not necessarily anything with his game this week.
We have some fun ones that we got. So some rapid fire answers, gentlemen. First from our buddy Samuel, who said it, a weird question for Chris. If there was a zombie apocalypse, out of the three of you, who would survive the longest and who would be the first to go? Now, I know I'm about to get roasted, which I think unfairly, but continue.
I would last the longest.
How?
Shaq would be second out. Keely is done within a couple weeks.
How?
The food supplies are dropping. She's going to accidentally eat a gluten-free cookie on accident and is going to be donezo. She's going to be down and out for the count very easily.
If she eats a gluten-free cookie, she'd be fine.
Sorry, a gluten-filled cookie. She's going to have to force to be eat something. It's going to take her out of the count.
Nope.
Easy, easy zombie pickings. Mm. Shotgun, I think, would last a while, but he also has a family to take care of, and that gets precarious in these zombie movies. He's going to have to sacrifice himself at some point.
But he literally is a zombie right now. How is he not just forming an alliance with them?
I could probably do the Bill Murray
role
and just walk around with some makeup on.
Play nine holes as a zombie. I think at some point he's going to have to sacrifice himself for the greater good that is his family because he loves them. So I think that's out. Me, my brother is an former Army scout, knows his way around a gun.
But you're not.
I'm sticking to that dude like... President Secret Service, baby. He will get me through it. That's why I think I'm lasting the longest. Oh, I'm going to die, but I will last the longest.
Okay, but what if I also stick with your brother? Huh?
Oh, we're shooting you on sight.
You still can't eat anything.
Actually, it wouldn't be bad because you don't have to be the fastest. You have to be the fastest or the slowest, and she wouldn't eat our gluten food.
How dare you?
So maybe.
Plus, you could also use her as a decoy.
Right.
We had a question from Mike who said, am I the only person on Twitter that doesn't care that it's Star Wars Day?
I do not care that it's Star Wars Day.
May the 4th be with you.
But Chris is also not really on Twitter, so he never tweets out his own stories. So does that count?
No.
But he does retweet like Marvel stuff, so if you think it does count. Because this would fall into the category of things that he would tweet about if he cared.
That blue check mark talks loud.
Whatever.
Star Wars Day is important for anyone that went to USC. Because obviously there's a lot of USC connections there. So
we got multiple questions about our buddies, Rain and Troy, who, congrats to them, got engaged over the weekend. Da-da-da-da. Happy for them. Scott Rodriguez says, which one of you are signing at Penguin and Troy's wedding? I think he meant singing, but I will be bringing my hat, Scott, and choosing my future at their wedding.
Oh, are you choosing team bride or team groom? Ooh, is that what it is?
That's hard. That's hard.
You're breaking out the hats for that?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to have a signing day ceremony at the front of your wedding.
Yeah, totally steal the spotlight. We also got a question from SC and SG, who said, when did Keely find out about Penguin of Troy and Michael Castillo? So, for a while.
Keely organized the whole thing.
No, I did not. But I knew for a good bit. I got the official tea on the sideline of the 2019 Cal game. from Alicia.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Specific.
Yeah. I got the news when they had evolved.
What quarter?
We have pregame. Good stuff. I love some tea. I love some pregame tea. The tastiest.
She does love pregame tea. Congrats to them.
Yes.
Please do a podcast at the wedding.
We did do instant analysis at Shotgun's wedding.
So they need to step it up.
Yeah, there you go. And with that, it's time to pass it over to you, Chrissy T. It's time for Take It or Leave It.
Bear with me to our fake corporate sponsor for the week. We didn't have enough time to get in an official lead-in, but shout out to our fake corporate sponsor for the week, Pro Football Focus. We're actually partners with them for real a couple years ago.
This is confusing.
For 247. But they're back to partner with us from the Family Feud podcast. Guys, we're media people. We're on Twitter a lot. We follow other media people. Have you ever just like followed somebody in the media world and you're just like, it's a good follow. But then a couple weeks later, you're like, this is a terrible decision. I'm going to unfollow this person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
So with Pro Football Focus's new grading system, they're not only grading athletes, they're grading journalists, media professionals. They have detailed scouting reports on all the best top people that cover all over the country. So they got breakdowns on every beat writer you could ever imagine.
I know where this is going.
You do know where this is going. I requested them to break us down. So we're going to read our scouting reports. Shotgun, you graded out as an 83.6. 83.6.
I'll take it, I guess.
Here's what the guys wrote about you. Impressive height, former top pitcher, live jaw, elite tweet production and skill set, versatile journalist that can fit into any scheme, personality off the charts, he will draw you in. Interviews well. Might fail medical because he will keep putting off the exam. Has a tendency to bite off more than he can chew. Don't be surprised if he's late to meetings. It's not because he doesn't care. It's because his car is literally in a ditch after traveling 3,000 miles round trip to cover American Samoa baseball. Sleep habits of a 17th century gravedigger. Narrow hips. Keely.
Damn it, my hips.
Those damn hips. Keely, you graded out as an 88.5.
What?
Wait, am I above Shotgun? That's all I care about.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
This is bullshit.
Underrated prospect due to height, but can be a legitimate building block for any organization. Elite on-air skills and makes others better when paired together. First round grade as a producer and can be a plug and play produce from day one. Extensive Beyonce knowledge if you're into that. Weirdly into makeup YouTube, but not a hindrance on overall performance. Medical risk due to her stomach can be indecisive to the point of failure. Ask to pick between Wednesday or Tuesday, won't have your answer until Friday. Makes up words to get out of making a choice. Sass will get her into trouble, but she has the foot speed to make up for it at times. Sunburns easily, like scary easily. I actually got an incomplete grade. Oh. Doesn't tweet enough to warrant grading. Literal flight risk when asked to be on air. That about sums it up, guys. That is a perfect, as you can see, those are very accurate grades.
Very accurate.
Take out the riffraff of subpar Twitter follows and leave the first round draft pick and be left with the first round draft pick writers. PFF, even we don't know our own grading formula. Thank you guys to the guys at PFF. This is a great thing. Check out all those gradings now. I think it's like $12.99. Use a special code Keely Shotgun and Chris. Just put all our names in and you get, I don't know, like 30% off. Whatever. You can pick whatever you want.
You get to pick your discount.
Yeah, you get to pick your discount. It's a great deal, but also very bad for business. Let's get into it. We got a Take It or Leave It Twitter question from Jonathan.
Johnny Five.
At Johnny Five.
That's how we say it.
We'll start with that one because I'm staring at it. USC will have 3 first rounders next year. Keaton and the Drakes. Possibly four with Brew. But we'll just start with the 3 first rounders. Keaton, Drake, and Drake.
I'm going to leave it.
Okay.
I think I'm going to leave it too.
I'm just leaving it because when's the last time USC had 3 first rounders?
Been a minute.
Yeah.
Even guys, you go in like, maybe they got a chance. And ends up, something happens.
It's always wonky.
Whether it be an injury or people look at Drake London and go, I don't know if he's an outside guy the way we want to use him. Is he fast enough? Whatever it may be. I just don't see it happening.
Okay, fair enough. Tyler Vaughns is a stronger chance to make the Colts than OG with the Bills.
I'm going to take this.
Okay.
Because I'm just trying to be decisive here, but I think having Michael Pittman there and having that connection and maybe feeling more comfortable.
An extra voice for the coaches.
Advocate.
Okay.
And you got a new quarterback coming in. I don't know. Whereas OG, I, to be honest, felt like he needed another year at USC. So I think that'll be a harder road.
I'm going to leave it.
Oh.
Because OG was a shutdown corner last year. You know, they weren't throwing the ball at him because nothing was being completed over there. Now, the one thing that was missing were the turnovers. And if he can slowly make some progress in that, then I think he starts seeing time on the field. And I think that, you know, it will only continue to improve. I think he has more upside there. So I'm gonna take that.
I think so, too. But I'm sticking with what I said.
Moving on. Talanoa Hufanga will be the first of the Polynesian trio of Jay Tufele and Marlon Tuipulotu to start a game in the NFL.
I'm going to take it because of his versatility. He could play different positions. Makes it more likely to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to take it just because it seems like there's probably going to be a freaky injury thing. It's like, oh, Talanoa is coming in.
Also, though, with the D linemen, they have a better opportunity to be rotational players early.
That's true.
Fair.
So they could play more early in their career, but he might be the first starter.
Obviously, barring injury, but Amon-Ra St. Brown is a virtual lock to make the all-rookie team in 2021.
I'm going to leave it from the terminology of virtual lock.
Amon-Ra St. Brown will make the all-rookie team.
Now we're that's a completely different question now, Chris.
Okay, if you want me to take off virtual lock. Remember the rule. Don't bet against...
Keely, go ahead.
Remember the rule. Don't bet against Amon-Ra.
Semantics are important, Chris. Welcome to the Family Feud
podcast. I shame your semantics.
Oh, I thought you... I thought you meant...
He was throwing it to you.
I thought you meant say the line, and no. So I was trying to say the line.
No, that works, too.
Okay. Which... Are we going with virtual lock? Are we locking? What's the lock situation
Amon-Ra St. Brown will make the all-rookie team in 2021. Barring injury.
I'm going to take it because you don't bet against the sun god. I think that's something we've established on this podcast.
What a great line. Don't bet against the sun god.
Jared Goff, check down Goff. Shorter throws. I'm going to take it.
Okay.
Now that you have taken away the virtual lock.
A little spring camp residuals. That's not the... Whatever. Jamar Sakona had the best camp of any defensive lineman.
Leave it. Oh, you gave me a look.
Are you going to explain, or?
I just think of Thule before I think of Jamar. So that was my just gut reaction.
I'm going to leave it, too. I was thinking Jay Toya before Jamar Sakona. It's just my... But he also has an elephant head, so maybe I was thinking of that first.
I think he flashed late, Jamar, but not enough for me to make him the camp guy.
We all said...
The camp god?
Camp guy.
Camp god.
Just to let you know, there was three different defensive linemen set for...
That's what I'm saying. It's an intriguing position status.
And we didn't even mention Drake Jackson.
True.
Which, if he would have practiced the whole time, that would be an easy answer.
Yeah, that too.
Take it or leave it, Helton's statement that Jonah Monheim might have had the best camp out of anyone.
No, leave it. That's why he wasn't one of my spring stars, and I mentioned five of them.
It's true. I'm going to leave it too.
His first name's not Drake, his last name's not Jackson, so he's not making the cut.
And that wraps up corporate. Thank you to Pro Football
Focus.
He was
teammates with Drake London, though. More Park High.
True.
Look at that live jaw just coming in. coming in with facts off the jump.
He did visit Jonah during the game two years ago. I'm just curious, Chris. Can we also look up the scouting reports for Ryan and Gerard? Yeah, sure, those will be interesting.
I can give you those next week if you want.
Yeah, please do.
Moving into the fun ones.
Potentially Chris Trevino's profile will get filled out.
Oh,
I complete it.
True. Maybe you and I should call the PFF guys.
Yeah, we'll have to check one.
Okay.
What's happening now? What's that now? You're taking one, you're leaving the other. One of those, Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter? Which one were you growing up?
Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
Considering you guys had to explain to me what Mortal Kombat was before we started recording.
You're talking about you never played a fighting game in your life?
No, my orthodontist had the...
You fought your orthodontist?
You fought your orthodontist?
No, they had a little finish him. Chun-Li! What? Where does that go?
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter.
Right?
No, finish him is Mortal Kombat.
Finish him is Mortal Kombat.
But then I got ADD and said Chun-Li. I'm going with Chun-Li, whatever, which one that one is. Street Fighter. Let's go. I was really good while waiting for my appointment.
So you're taking Street Fighter.
Sure.
Finish him. Fatality.
Esports gyms. Japan has opened the first esports gym where you can go in and book like a 3-hour time slot to play video games or get coached by a professional gamer. 24-hour. Japan's opened the first esports gym.
They've had something similar like that in my hometown.
You're thinking of an internet cafe.
No, it was
just because you sit in an internet cafe and play Game Boy does not make it an esports gym.
Whatever. I feel like every...
No, I enjoyed that one.
No. I feel like this fun take it or leave it, you try and slip in like a e-gaming jab.
It's just been two.
It seems esports like reporter
because it was notable, an esports gym. You like to game, so why are you complaining?
Take it. Why not? Esports on the rise, people.
I take it.
You're going to go to an esports gym?
I'm not going to go to an esports gym, but I also don't go to a regular gym, so.
White Castle. A White Castle opened in Florida. I don't know if you saw the video, but the line was ridiculous. It was literally just, it was like a 30-second video of just on fast forward of people waiting in line. I don't know why you wait in line for an opening of a new fast food restaurant, but White Castle. I feel like Shotgun may be the only one here who's had White Castle.
Here's the thing. If you're going to wait really long for something, why not just like wait at home and then go on like 4 days later when the line's like less crazy?
You want to be first.
But you're obviously not. You're not, though.
You want those tasty little juicy burgers first.
And my take on White Castle, I've only been there. I haven't eaten anything, but it looked kind of lame. Gluten-free. It looked kind of lame.
That's why you're dying first.
Okay.
White Castle's the only place unaffected.
They send Keely out to get the food. Okay, came back, but it's all gluten-free. Oh.
I can survive. I'm crafty.
I am leaving. Leave it. White Castle. Nothing special to me.
Have you had it?
Yes.
Knew it.
In the South, we have Crystal, which is similar, square, small burgers, which I also would leave. I was not a big fan of. Crystal burgers were always super greasy, so wasn't a big fan of that. The other question, though, is take or leave the opening, restaurant opening, being there first.
Did you just see him jujitsu your own segment right there?
It's fine.
It's okay. Jeez. It's Helium Boys. It's
whatever.
Yeah.
Playing
and
off
like,
each other.
And like they do the thing where they like give the first 50 feet people like
so
Chick-fil-A for a year. Free Chick-fil-A for a year.
So like if it's that, then I understand jumping in line and being there 24 hours early, the tent, whatever. If the reward is like a year of food, yeah, that makes sense. Buffalo Wild Wings is like, you know, you get so many wings for a year, so whatever it may be. But after that, what? Just to say I was there the first day? I don't understand the allure.
I don't get it.
I already stated my opinion on this at the top. So,
the NBA play-in tournament.
Here's the thing. I like madness, but I also don't like things that you can tell are just for ratings, and this feels like a ratings thing. You know?
Well, you could say that about the expansion of the NCAA tournament from...
We do say that.
16 teams. What it was originally, and then 32, and then 48.
Yeah, if there's
and
anything
then 64,
that's money,
and then 68.
It's March Madness.
Yeah, it's all about money.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with it being 68 teams.
Did I say my opinion on that? No.
That's the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
It was all done for money and ratings, yes.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I've never been a big March Madness person.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm serious.
I'm leaving it, though. Because you just continue to water down the postseason, which is it's interesting to like who can actually get in the playoffs, but particularly in the NBA, it's so rare that a 7 or 8 seed even wins. And if they do win the first series, they usually don't make it to the second series past the second series. So, you know, when you water down a product where the power teams are the power teams, it's not like the NFL where anyone can beat anyone because of matchups. In NBA, is much more the, you know, the best teams end up with the best records. Baseball can be different too because of, you know, pitching and whatnot. But basketball is like the least exciting to see that 8-1 matchup. You're just like, okay, you know, the Lakers last year, like they're going to run through at least the first couple rounds. Then maybe something will be difficult. So I'm leaving it because I don't really get excited about, you know, the random Memphis versus Sacramento matchup or whatever ends up being late in the seedings. Now you have more than half the teams. You have 2/3 of the teams are making the playoffs in each league. So just continue to water it down and makes it a little bit less interesting to me.
I should have known doing a sports thing would kick off a longer explanation.
Of course.
And finally, I thought these were fake, but they're real. Some of the top NFL draft quarterback prospects partnering with Chipotle and releasing their orders. So you could order their... You could order the Zach Wilson bowl.
I got so many ads for Zach Wilson and Chipotle. It's ridiculous. His face and Chipotle was all over my screen last week.
Are you leaving it?
Just for the sheer fact that, hey, you know, y'all know I'm a Chipotle gal. But if you spam me that much, I'm out for a bit.
Well, I'm taking the fact that they're getting money however they can.
Sure.
You know, that you saw.
Get your money.
Multiple USC players with Instagram posts or whatever. I take that. You know, get your money while you can.
Yep.
But I'm leaving the bowls themselves.
Okay, but if it was Shotguns Brattling Zaxby's order, you're all over that.
Oh, all over. Anything that has me in it, I'm of course all over.
Ooh, we know.
And for the N1.
N1. No, I didn't like that one.
No, I didn't like that one. N1 to the N1.
N1.
There you go. You need a whistle.
Yeah.
Do the whistle. There you go. There it is. We saw a lot of draft parties going on. So I asked you guys, you guys are getting drafted. What does your draft parties look like? Who is sponsoring? We saw a lot of sponsors too. We saw a lot of Pizza Huts and Wingstops with the little thanks for sponsoring the draft party, baby. Who is sponsoring? How many people are there? Is it a crazy event? Is it just you and your parents and your significant other and your dog? Or is it everybody in the whole neighborhood? Who is coming to your draft party and where is your draft party? Are you renting out of space? Is it your house? What's going on?
Can we assume that we're like a late first round pick, so we don't want to go to the draft in case we slide a little bit, but we're still knowing we're going to be a high round
pick? You will be a late first or a second round pick. That is the range you are in.
Well, considering that I'm a higher prospect than Chalk, and I'm going to assume I'm late first round.
Yeah, you're going to have everybody there on the Thursday, and then drop to the second round.
No.
Oh, no.
Believe in yourself, Shotgun.
Yeah, I know. You're going to believe in yourself that you're going to be a first round, and you're going to drop the second round, so you're going to have to wait.
My draft ranking is higher than yours. Did you hear our corporate sponsor?
Your prospect ranking, they're going to fall in love with me. It only takes one team.
Only takes one team, baby. All it takes is one team.
Okay, I don't want it at my house because I don't want the whole nation to see the inside of my house. I don't want to deal with my parents having to think that the whole nation is going to see our house because that's cleaning for days.
How accurate that is.
Yeah, but then your family's house finally gets cleaned.
Right.
Okay, it's clean, but it's just like immaculate for the nation. And so I think I'm renting out of space. I don't know. I'll make it look homey, but also like it'll look good for the production.
Okay.
Either like In-N-Out or Ruby's. Ruby's Diner. Shouts to Ruby's. I love me some Ruby's.
Trash diner.
How dare you?
Ruby's restaurant is what it is. No. You close at 8:30. You're not a diner.
Ruby's.
I don't want to start on this again.
Ruby's.
This is one of the original take it or leave it.
If anyone works at Ruby's, hit me up. I'm your gal. But I think that would be my thing.
How many people?
Oh.
You keeping it close? You keeping it?
I'm keeping it
anyone
close.
Who wants to walk up and
no, listen. No,
okay.
No.
Okay.
I'm.
This is back to the entourage question.
True. That I cut out last week.
Oh.
I think it would be like a medium size. Like I need some hype people, but I don't want like the "you didn't talk to me ever. Why are you here now?" on my coattails.
Are you crying?
No, I'm not a crier really.
Since I'm going to be a high first round draft pick now.
Yeah. Okay.
Now that I've changed my mind about where I'm being drafted. I'm going to go with a local restaurant.
Okay.
And
wow.
Spread the love.
Local bar and grill.
Yeah, Ruby's. Sorry.
Oh.
Not at the draft's at night. They're going to be closed at by the time the seventh picks up.
And, I mean, they're hitting up my favorite Mexican restaurant back home in Georgia, or Spumoni's in Sherman Oaks, one of the two, and having that on display, a little extra love for a local restaurant, while also still trying to post on Instagram about Pizza Hut or whoever's giving me money.
He's doing the Twitter with the Spumoni's, and he's doing the Instagram lives with the Pizza Hut baby.
Whatever it takes to get that money. It will be a large group.
I'm there, just so you know.
Oh, Shotgun's draft party's lit.
I would assume
I'm inviting anybody that wants to come that are my friends, you know. And then once the draft ends, then the fun begins.
He means the drinking.
Whoa. Yes, I do mean the drinking.
And finally, what is your draft pose? What?
You got to go. What's your deal?
No, I don't. I give the question. I don't take the questions.
Fine.
What is your draft?
You're gonna push harder on that. You want it.
What is your draft phone call stance? You're only getting three options. You're getting the stand up talking while everyone's sitting down. You're getting the normal sit back, or you're getting the.
You gotta explain what you're doing right now.
I'm standing up. I'm just sitting normally, or they're leaning forward on their knees and they're covering their heads, kind of, and everyone's kind of like hugging them around. You only get to choose one. So which one's your official draft call status?
Just lounging. I think that one. The second one. Whatever that one is.
Just the second one. You're just normal. Couch, just sitting on the couch. Okay.
Can I like method act this for a second?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I think I'd be elbows to knees.
Hunched over?
Yeah.
Can they call like...
Focusing in. Because yeah. I want to sound professional to okay. whoever is drafting me.
Okay.
Oh, we're playing it through the speakers. Shushing everybody. Playing it through the speakers of the TV or the sound system.
Whatever works.
Okay.
So everyone can be involved in hearing it. Yeah. See, I'm a big group experience type of person. I want everybody to feel the love.
I feel
enjoy
that.
It.
Well, there you have it. Those are their draft parties. One is lit, one is a little less lit. Yeah, I didn't really have a good ending for that, but
I'm gonna assume that mine's the lit one, just saying.
Okay.
If you have rubies.
What a terrible assumption.
It's lit. Hire me Ruby's place.
Yeah, as long as the party's over by 8:30.
Okay. Calm down.
Guilt him.
Alrighty, guys. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Looking ahead, May is pretty chill, college football-wise. So what are you guys expecting for the next couple of weeks?
The ramp up for recruiting.
Yeah, dead period ending.
Chris and I were at an event on Saturday. There's another event coming up this Saturday. Feels like we're getting more back to there being events most weekends during the spring. So that kind of feels like what's happening. And then, obviously, in June, the NCAA is going to open things up for official visits. And then it's on.
Like Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Family Feud podcast. Thanks so much for listening. That's Shotgun. That's Grace. I'm Keely. We'll see y'all next time.
Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.